Hello, this is Jay Nemro, and this is The Life Autistic. This is episode 579. I don't know if I want to call this regret. No, I don't want to call it regrets. I want to call this, I already did one of wanderings. I don't know what to call it, but you'll come up with it. I was talking with Lisa this morning about how I had done things so much differently than my parents had. So I think that's probably the big thing I have in common maybe with people from the 60s, hippie types, I suppose. I think their biggest thing was they were rebelling against parents, a society that they didn't agree with. Now, some of them just took it to a crazy level of just, you know, going insane and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, drugs, free love, stuff like that. They were certainly going against what would be considered kind of a puritanical, conservative sort of reality. They were certainly going against that. And I find myself doing that. Now, I don't dislike my parents. I'm not rebelling against my parents. Am I doing what my parents did? No. By and large, no. I like to think that I'm being thoughtful, or trying to think through what I'm doing, and hopefully I'm doing it right. I do come up that as I tend to walk away from culture and society and say, you know, I don't really know what our culture and society are really after, honestly. I don't know what they're after. I feel that it's just a dodge to get more money. You know, I don't know. I feel like as a society, we're being pulled in a direction by our betters to profit them. That we're just raw materials being used. You know how a company will take raw ore out of the ground and turn it into like knives and cars and other things, and that's what they do, and they're proud of what they do. I think a lot of the ruling class see people besides them as that, as like raw ore. And that we are fashioned under their hand into something that profits them. You know, I will turn this poor schmuck into a machinist in my factory who will make me rich, and I will throw them pennies to keep them from walking away, because that's what's required. You know, it always requires some labor, some activity just to make raw ore into whatever product you're trying to sell. And it's just like we're part of a process of making a product for sale, or we end up being that product that is for sale. And, And that bothers me. I want to be able to determine my own destiny. And that's been kind of the mantra of my own of my life. Now, you might think that's funny because that would lead to being kind of an atheist, because people can look at God as being that kind of thing. Well, he's pushing me, he's prodding me, he's forcing me to do what he wants. And you go, well, I guess you could look at it that way, but honestly, I see him as somebody with lots of experience, willing to share and giving me a fantastic opportunity that I want to pursue. You know, do I want to be like God? Sure. Do I want to have those kind of opportunities? I do. Now, I don't mean that everybody has to want that. It's there. It's there. It's an opportunity. Anyway, I have wanted to go a different course than my parents did, or I feel my parents did. And I knew that since I was a teenager. I didn't want to be like my parents. And that's not to denigrate the choices they've made. I didn't think my parents were necessarily wrong. You know, I'm not saying my parents were bad, and I'm not going to be bad like they are. It doesn't rise to that kind of emotional level. I don't think my parents were bad. I've, especially since I've gotten older, developed more understanding of my parents. And not just because I'm in the role they were in. I mean, when I talk to them now that I'm 40 and they're in their 60s, and they are in a position to talk to me kind of like a peer, sort of. Not really, but you know, we have adult talks. We talk about politics. We talk about, you know, when we talk about religion and things that adults talk about together, and when the conversation steers to life goals or to what we always wanted but yet couldn't be able to pull off, I find out that my parents had extremely different desires in life than I did. And, you know, that isn't to say they were bad parents or I was a bad child. You know, we were just, you know, everybody is very different, I find. I can't say that that's true of everybody. You know, it can easily be said my parents were given this Zenith kid. And how do you parent a Zenith kid? Who knows? Are they going to tend to do what they're going to tend to do and there's very little you can do about it? Maybe. I don't know, you know. But I seem to recall, as a teenager, having goals, having aspirations, having desires that, you know, some of them were silly and childish, sure. But I've basically been led by them my life up until now, from, you know, 15 up to 40. I tend to still have those desires, you know. I have a strong desire for freedom. Have I gotten it yet? Well, no, you know. Freedom and independence, being able to do what I want to do. And, you know, that's tricky because it has to be counterbalanced by what my wife wants. Because we're a pair. We're a companionship. We are us. That's the most important thing, you know. I know I'm crazy, I'm radical. My wife is not. She's been very accommodating to let me do what I've done so far. You know, I'd still try to drag her more toward the radical side. And she resists, and I understand that. It's not what she wants. Is it her job to give up everything she wants in life to appease me? No. We have to find some... We're going to end up having to compromise. I can't have this. She doesn't get that. And that's what that is. You know, it typically isn't about the things that we want. We try really hard to give ourselves as much of what we want without punishing the other person. If it's something that's going to make somebody else's life miserable, we don't do it. So, anyway, so that's kind of what I've been talking to myself about. And I've been wondering, you know, I've taken a really different course than most people do. Some people say, oh, wow, I wish I could do what you do. And some people would say, I wouldn't do that in a million years. You must be crazy. You know, depending on the person, depending on what aspect of my life they're talking about. Or our life. I was sitting there and I was saying, you know what, I really worry that I've set, maybe have set some unrealistic expectations on my children, things that they think they should be doing. Like, just as an example, the whole homeschooling issue. You know, do my children feel like they have to homeschool because of my attitude about it? And I want them to know that they don't have to. They don't have to do that. If they don't share my philosophy on that, I'm not going to give them crap about it. You know? I worry that I'm going to be a very distant grandfather to my kids. Now, you know, my father's dad was a very distant, I felt, at least for me, was a very distant grandparent. You know, I think he did a much better job with the younger grandchildren, you know. As he got into that whole thing about being a grandfather, I think other kids got a better relationship with him than I did. My brother and I were, and there's two cousins, Robbie and Julie. We were basically the grandkids for quite a while, for probably about 10, 12 years. You know, until the next kind of half generation of grandkids came up. And I'm sure that grandfather struggled with that. You know? My father and my grandfather had a strained relationship, and I think that contributed too. And I said, but you know, do I feel, you know, I'm sure people would come and go, oh, that's so sad, you know, oh, I wish you could have had a wonderful relationship with your grandfather, and oh, look at what you missed. And honestly, I don't know what I missed. I feel okay, you know. I don't know. I don't know if it would have been better being around him more. I don't know if it didn't. My brother Joe could shine more light on it for the simple reason that he as a young man, he lived with our paternal grandparents. And I think he would have a much different take on it than I do. Because I never did. I had, you know, my family moved far away, and I never really felt the need to come back. But, you know, I don't have regret particularly. I have a little bit of guilt because, you know, I feel like my grandparents want a little bit more out of me, you know. I kind of have thrown myself into some kind of self-exile. I don't tend to be really a part of family things, you know. And I don't want them to feel badly. So, you know, it's funny because I don't tend to do this for my own needs. I don't feel the need, you know, honestly. But I don't want them to feel bad because they might think that this is their fault, that they haven't done what's required to help Jay feel more a part of things. And you go, you know what? Jay really doesn't have any inclination that way. I don't dislike my family. They're nice people. Do I feel separate from them? Yeah. But I feel separate from most people. So that's nothing I think can be blamed on anybody particularly. You know, maybe it's a Zenith thing. I don't feel the great need to be a part of any of it. You know, I see it mostly as a bunch of traveling that's obnoxious. I see it you know, and I don't want people to get the impression that, you know, they aren't loved. You know, I don't want to go into that territory. I don't want to go into that territory. Because it would tend to hurt other people. And that's not good when I have absolutely no intention of hurting anybody. There's no need to be honest about my feelings because I don't have any feelings about it. So there's no point talking much about it because it just would tend to say, oh, you don't love me. And you go, but see, you know, it's that whole thing, you know, if you don't love me, you must hate me. And I'm sure it was something that I did. And I feel the need to rectify it. And I go, no. It's not that there's hatred there. There's nothing there. You know, and I will take full responsibility. I'm a damaged person, okay? You can call Zenith a wonderful thing, or you can call it a lot of mental damage. I'm not going to blame it on circumstances or environment. I'm going to blame it on just genetics, you know. And I don't want you to take the blame for that. People can't control their genetics. You know, I don't feel very much. Most of my feeling things are somewhat manufactured. And honestly, it takes a lot of effort to manufacture it. So I can only manufacture a little bit. And I have to reserve that for my immediate family, what little I can drum up. And, you know, you can sit there and you can go, oh, Jay, you poor soul. And you go, what? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Wave the magic wand over me and all of a sudden I'm this bucket full of emotions? Like most people are? But I really don't want that. I've seen what emotions do to people. You know, I'm kind of like Data, except, you know, I feel a kinship with Spock and with Data from Star Trek. You know, Spock was a little closer to Spock because I really don't want all the emotions. Data did. Data wanted the human experience. I really don't. Because frankly, I don't think I have the capacity to manufacture it. I want to be, you know, my chief motivator, the thing that you know gets me to go to social settings is mostly guilt toward making other people feel better. Has nothing to do with me particularly. You know, that's why people say, God, Jay serves Lisa and Jay does all these things for Lisa. And you're going, boy, you know, and Lisa always says, Jay, is there something I can do for you? And it's like, no. Don't you have any needs? And you go, not that way. You know, I need to eat. There's things that I like, but it's mostly just filling in spaces. You know? Nobody wants to feel empty. I think I maybe have more emptiness than most people do. Most people fill it up with their emotions. I don't have very much that way. Which is funny because at movies I cry. Heck, I cry at movies you're not supposed to cry at. When that movie ends, that experience ends, I cry. I don't get it. You know, it's almost like the whole thing about autism and bad wiring. I feel like I've got the same bad wiring autistic people do. You know, my responses to things don't seem to be appropriate. And I guess I can try to control them. Over time, I've just given up. Lisa seems to like it because I think it's the only emotionalism I give her. Do I have joy? Yeah, I have some joy. Mostly with Lisa, mostly with my kids. And, you know, it isn't that I don't like social things. You know, people say, oh, well, autistic people don't like social circumstances. But I think that's a cop-out. I don't care about them. And what makes it so exciting and wonderful for everybody else, oh, I love going to parties. Oh, I love being with other people because, it gives me great warm feelings. I don't have that. I'd much rather be doing something else that may be more purposeful or takes care of some need I have. I do have needs. But, you know, parties don't do anything for my needs. They don't, and I usually go to the party for other people. I go to parties at church because it's expected. If I don't show up, people will give me crap for it, and I like to avoid crap, so there it is. It makes other people feel better when I'm there. So I tend to go. Even though it's like, you know, I can take it or leave it. I go, I entertain people. I think that's the ability to entertain people. I don't get it. Because I don't understand it because I'm just doing what Jay does. Other people think, oh, you know, he must ham it up in front of a mirror all the time. He must practice. He's so practiced at this. And you go, no, I'm not. I don't practice this at all. Is just the way I am. You get Jay. You know, I worry for my kids having, you know, from the genetic standpoint, am I being kind to my children? I have a weird philosophy on life. You know, it's based on me and what I'm after and what seems to be true from my viewpoint. But I don't know if that really helps my children any. So I really worry for them. Because, you know, do you prepare them adequately for this world? And I have been somewhat of a recluse from this world. I don't tend to get involved in it. The ways I get involved with it are because it makes Lisa happy to do it. And I want Lisa to be happy. I want her to have a good life. I want her to have the kind of life she wants. And it comes into conflict with my minimalism, just me. It comes into conflict with Jay. So, you know, and it's frustrating sometimes because, yeah, do I give a whole lot? Perhaps I give more than she does. I don't know. Lisa works awfully hard, so I tend to give her the benefit of the doubt. that she deserves every good thing that I can help her to have. You know? I guess. Here I go saying, you know, a whole bunch. As if you're going to know any of it. So I don't know if I'm the only Zenith in the whole world. If I'm talking about an experience, a life, an existence that's truly my own and nobody else's, and that it bears no relationship to anybody else. Everybody else could say, "Gee, I can't comprehend you." You know, I'm sure they'll say, "Oh, you must have had a horrible childhood." You know, going back to my relationship with my parents. And you go, you know, I don't have a memory of it. You know, if at some point I was so traumatized that I've cut off myself from all emotional ties, you know, what am I to do about that? You know? I feel the ungenuineness of trying to make it look good for other people. And I do that a lot. And I'll continue to do that because that's what my wife needs. It's what my kids need. It's what other people around me need. You know, I end up trying to become what I think other people need from me. You know, oh, Jay's my best friend, and I look at, you know, there's some people, I guess, that have that view. And I'm just incredulous because I go, what? What? Are you so desperate that I'm your only possibility for a friend? This is because I never picture myself as the friend type. You know? Not, you know, I remember as a young teenager, I had a friend, and I think I was his friend because I didn't treat him badly. You know, I've never been, I don't think I've ever been a bigoted person. Although at times I've said, you know what, a group of people that have maybe the same skin color, same bone structure, seem to have some universal flaws or seem to have some universal problems. And I've gotten to the point where I don't talk about them because I found out that it was a taboo subject and it was problematic. But it's still there, you know. But this guy, he was young, he was black, he had terrible acne problems. You know, and he wasn't cool. You know, there's a whole thing where all black people are really cool, and he wasn't. Boy, could he dance though. He was a great dancer. He used to at the talent shows we used to have at school. He would do like the Michael Jackson moonwalk stuff. That was back when Michael Jackson was still popular and cool instead of a weird freak. You know, and he was really, really good at that stuff. I'm sure Michael Jackson was his hero in some ways. But I'm sure he would say, "Oh, Jay was one of my best friends," and you're going, and I didn't ever feel like I was doing anything. Him wanting to hang around with me was kind of a nuisance to me. Now I've matured, I've gotten better. I don't know what constitutes better. I've gotten to the point to where, you know, I'm okay with some one-on-one stuff. I realize, I can see it in some people that I think would consider me their best friend or a good friend now. I see their flaws. I see their troubles. I see their their repulsive bits. I'd say most people have some repulsive bits about them. I'm sure I do, probably more than most. But, you know, I've always been the type to kind of look past that, I guess. I don't know. And just treat you like anybody else. And I think that's what it ultimately is, you know. I give everybody about the same, everybody outside of my family, my immediate family, I give them about the same caring and understanding as anybody else. I wasn't really wanting to get into all this me stuff, honestly. Because it was, I wasn't talking to Lisa about me. I was talking to Lisa about my kids and hoping that what we had done with our kids was actually helpful instead of a hindrance given the society that we have. You know, a society that almost demands absolute compliance to social mores, that says this is absolutely the way it is, and if you aren't part of this, you have no value, you're a bad person, or whatever. And I've rejected that, and I've created kind of a little mini-society in my family where we had a lot more freedom, because that's always what I wanted. I didn't like being constrained by those things. When I approach God, most people would think I was nuts because I have a strong belief in God. But that strong belief in God comes from the fact that I think God offers more freedom than anything else. Most people think of God as this, you know, nasty tyrant of a guy that's always giving out dictums and making commandments that don't make any sense. They don't make any sense. But are really controlling. They probably think of him as a real control freak. You know, and I don't. I don't view God that way. I view God as a person who says, this is what I am. I'm God. And I'm giving you advice as to how to get to where I am. And that's what this life is. It's an opportunity to get where I am. And, you know, God. I'm thinking God's saying this. And those commandments are made to reduce problems that would otherwise, you know, make the journey to becoming like God more difficult. He actually tries to smooth the way for us. Of course, if you have no intention of being like God, yes, keeping all these rules is really quite cumbersome, you know. You don't want to live the life of, well, you know, I can't say I've watched The Apprentice at all, what was The Apprentice? Donald Trump, a very successful businessman, started a TV show called The Apprentice. It's kind of a weird, they call them reality shows, but they're really not. They're all contrived and stinted. They aren't scripted so much as they're just, you know, throwing people into weird circumstances and entertaining people by seeing how they behave given these circumstances. But, you know, the Bill, Donald Trump's, what he's looking for in an executive, his sort of rules of successful business management is what that show is all about. And if you impress him by your ability to follow his program, you know, you would get a shot to work for him, make six figures, and everything else that goes with it. So, that was the premise of the show, and in a way, I think that's kind of the premise of God. God says, I'm willing to bring you into my business, just like Donald Trump did. And, but, you know, I'm going to put you through a series of tests, and I'm going to see how you turn out. Now, I'm going to tell you ahead of time what I want to see. And if I'm not seeing it, well, you don't get the opportunity to go on with your life, and, you know, whatever existence you want is yours. And that's kind of what I think God does. In a way, you know, I guess this is kind of like a reality TV show that you're a part of for a few things. And it's a big test. Taking just regular people and seeing if they can do what God asks them to do. With God saying, this will lead you, you know, I think that's the big missing ingredient to a lot of religion, is that it's all these rules and regulations toward nothing, honestly, you know. Well, you get to go back and live with God, and you go, what, I'm living here? I'm perfectly happy living here. Why am I really concerned about living with God? What's the point of that? Why, does he live in the Riviera and we all get to play by the pool? Honestly, that doesn't intrigue me. I'm sure other people that would be cool. Oh, you get to hang out and get a great tan by the pool for the rest of eternity. Is that what God does? You know, I don't know. You go, do I want God's life? Yes. Am I willing to pursue it? Yes. Is that why I go to church? Yes. Is that why I keep the commandments of Christ to set down? Yes. Do I try to get the right attitude about it too? Yes. See, and that's a whole different take than a lot of people who are religious. I don't know what their take is. I'm not even going to try to approach it anymore. I used to try to speculate, and I probably still will on occasion. But honestly, I don't know. So, taking all that stuff into consideration, am I doing good? Am I doing justice to my kids? You go, honestly, I'd have to say yes, just from the standpoint of, you know, society isn't the end. Being a successful member of society isn't the end product. It's a means. Maybe. I mean, society tries to be an end because they don't see any other end out there, so they have to manufacture their own, you know. Well, you should be a good person, and you shouldn't be mean to other people. You should uphold the law. And you go, yes. And you go, but, you know, and it's funny because I tend to do the same things, but for different reasons. And I guess that's my great Zenith experience, is that people think I fit in when I have never fit in. I don't fit in at all. All my motivations are absolutely different from everybody else's. I've just gotten to talking in polite company. I tend to talk the same line as everybody else does, but I don't believe any of it. You know, people go, oh, Jay, you don't believe the church is true? And you go, well, I believe the gospel is true. I believe that God really is trying to get us to some point. I think most people don't understand or grasp it or care enough about it. But, you know, they are much more willing to latch on to other people's expectations. You know, I personally think the world is kind of funny, and honestly, you know, I really don't understand people's motivations toward nearly everything. It really doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't really know where people are coming from most of the time. Because I really don't get it. But, you know, that's neither here nor there particularly. You know, people are going to do what people are going to do. And all I'm saying is God's given you a fantastic opportunity. You know, you can either take it or leave it. Now, it's the whole point of existence here. I guess God is going to take it personally if you just kind of slap it off and you blow the whole thing off. He's going to punish you for the bad things that you do, for the times when you actually hurt people. I think he'll basically just ignore you if you were just a lump, honestly. You know, if you never really did anything, if you never really worked toward anything, or if you never really did anything bad, but you never really did anything in favor of trying to become more like God, then he's just going to say, well, that was nice, you know, you can shake my hand, and you can go, wow, I shook hands with God, and, you know, he'll say, now you go over there. It's a nice place. I hope you enjoy it. I'm feeling really generous because I like to think I'm a generous God. So here, you know, here's a place that's a lot nicer than the place you were at. The bad people aren't here. Basically, people kind of like you. And you should have a very happy existence. You know, I hope you enjoy yourself. Bye. And, you know, it's kind of like, I guess I keep coming back to movies. Kind of like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The older version where, you know, the kids got this wonderful opportunity. They were going to go and get a tour of his chocolate factory, and it was all wonderful. And, you know, the kids were greedy and uncaring and wanting things for themselves, and they basically ended up getting them, you know, but they were little things, or they didn't get anything at all because, you know, it wasn't something that they were, that Mr. Wonka was willing to give. But he was looking for that, for a person to take over the operation. It's almost kind of a God aspect there. But that's what God does for us. Gives an opportunity. Anyway, so getting back to the whole society thing, and if I prepared my children well for society that I keep making reference to, but then walking away from to talk about something else. I guess I can come back and I can say, it's okay. I don't have to feel weird about it because, you know what? Trying to appease society is not the end all of life, like so many people think it should be. You know, the most important thing is to meet society's requirements. You know, going with the flow, going with the current is probably the most important thing to do, because, you know, you're going to have a more carefree life if you do that. If you do what society expects you to do, you'll meet less resistance over time than if you try to buck the system, because the system will buck you back. And I've always been bucking the system, I suppose. But not in a very strident way, because I don't care about taking down the system. I can care less about it. The system can go out its merry way and destroy as many people as it wants to. It's sad. I feel for the individual people who are chewed up and are taken advantage of and feel victimized by the system. I feel for them, but honestly, when it comes down to it, they actually end up being the instruments of their own victimization. You can't save them from the thing that they don't want to be saved from. They desperately want to fit in better. And to the degree that they don't, you know, society tends to punish you for that. Economically, you know, whatever way, I guess our system is basically an economic system when you look at it that way. You know, I feel bad for them, but honestly, all you can do is try to open up their eyes to different, possibly different ways of living, different ways of being, so that they say, you know what, I don't have to appease the system or, you know, I'm not even interested in what the system is trying to accomplish. Now, I've gone so far down that road, I almost can't talk to human beings. I can't talk to people. I almost feel like a different species. Because, you know, I'm somewhere else now. Now, I'm not going to say if, you know, I think where I am is a lot better for me, but I'm not willing to go as far as to say I think it's better for everybody. I have a suspicion that it might be, but other than that, I, you know, people also have to want it. And most people will just say, well, that's just silly, you know, that's crazy. I just want to go to the mall and have a good time and hang with my friends. And you go, okay, I can't offer you anything better than that. You know, because if that's really what you want, that's really what you want. That's really what you're going to do. I can only say, you know, there's other possibilities. And they go, gee, that sounds like that requires work, or that requires thinking, and I've decided I don't like that. Of course, it's not... Maybe that's another one of my big reasons that I have a problem with schools and other institutions of society, is because they really do want to shove you hard that way, you know. Life is all about getting the highest paying job you can get so you can acquire as many things as you can that you know, as many playthings as you want. And make sure you do it on credit so that the powers that be can get rich off of you. You know, make sure you work for the powers that be because that'll make us happier. You know, and then you get to retire sometime. You get to have a big RV and drive around. You know, and I'm not saying that that's it, but that's a lot of the vision that society gives. Is it, you know... It's really interesting if society were a person, if you could anthropomorphize society and all of its institutions, everything that goes together, the government and everything else, into a person, I think that person would be extremely self-centered and always trying to get you to do something that tends to make... tends to make society and its buddies, government and industrial leaders, tends to make them rich. I think that's really, you know, you can always accuse a rich person of doing that, you know, of saying you're always looking out for your own self-interest and everybody else, and there is only two kinds of people. There's people who serve your needs to make you happy, and then there's people that need to start serving your needs. You know, that's how markets expand, is, you know, you try to find new places, new people that don't understand or don't get your product, and how you can get them to want to buy it over and over and over and over again to make the stockholders happy. You know, it ends up being what it is. But if you could make society a person or government like a person, that's the kind of person it would be. You know, self-centered, self-interest, and everybody else kind of works in their favor. Now they're willing to share some of that wealth with people that they think can make their wealth greater. You know, it's kind of like that. It's kind of the ultimate capitalist sort of thing. I always thought the capitalist system was actually the most honest one, in that I think it answered natural processes the best, and I always think that nature tends to reflect truth so much more than anything else we've come up with. Anytime we wander away from natural processes, from people behaving in something of a natural way, that you're starting to wander away from real truth. Now, you know, that doesn't take into account that you can't say, beyond being natural, I'm going to be something better than that. The whole Christian concept of that is excellent, because, you know, like I said, capitalism tends to be naturally true. You know, everybody tends to work for their own self-interest. Yeah? And only tend to be interested in a natural state in other people's, in how other people feel or other people have, only to the point of wanting to, you know, wanting to kind of scratch their back so they'll scratch yours and you'll get more of your self-interest taken care of. We usually can't do it in a vacuum with just us. We have to get other people to want to do what we want. You know, so we help them with what they want, and they're more likely to give us what we want, and stuff like that. You know, there can be a lot of good come from that. You know, there can also be evil, because one can seek for power and strive to hurt people to get what they want. But you only do that to a degree. It's really easy to do that when the people are a different class, or you feel like they're inferior, or you feel like that they want nothing better, and so you kind of do your institutions to create those kinds of people that you can say, hey, you know what? I educated them, I gave them all this. They, you know. And you have other motives too, because you do want them to kind of be products that can be shoved around, and they may grumble about it a little bit, but not very much, you know. And you go, you know, that's what it ends up being. So, you know, when you're going, boy, I want to answer society's means? No, I really don't. Now, do I have to live with other people that are doing that? Yeah. Do I have to, you know, do I want to make waves too much? No, I don't. Because it actually makes my life more difficult. So I don't want to do that. I don't want to just voluntarily make my life difficult. I do want some things, and if society can help me get those things, am I going to go society's way a lot? Yeah, sure. You know. It's natural, it's honest, it's true. Do I want to do bad things to people? No, because I'm trying to be like God. You know, goodness comes from having a desire to have better things down the road. God said that He will give you better things down the road if you keep some rules. You know, the better you keep those rules, the better that attitude gets, the better of a person you become, the more likely you are to get a better reward. Now, society is also cooked up that if you're basically good, you'll have everything. Therefore, you know, people don't strive. People don't try to do great. They're just satisfied in not doing evil. And I think that profits society quite a bit. Because, you know, if you get people who are too ambitious, if you get people who are too, have too much drive, you know, it tends to upset the apple cart, because they want a big piece of the pie too, and it's very important to society that there's only, you know, a relative handful of people that do that, because then, you know, dynasties like the Kennedys or the Rockefellers or people like that, those kinds of dynasties can be perpetuated even when that family doesn't, you know, even when that great, powerful patriarch or matriarch is gone, that family can still hold on to power, because there's still that ability to control it. It isn't based totally on a meritocracy. which is always dangerous, you know. A Rockefeller wouldn't have any power if there was a straight meritocracy, because at some point, that person wouldn't be as capable as somebody else would, and somebody would take his place and shove him aside. The fact that we have a society that tends to kind of keep people in their place really works for those people, you know, the Rockefeller sorts, you know. It gives an opportunity for people who are really wanting that kind of life. They can also get something like that. No thing is totally closed off to you. But, you know, you do tend to do that. Okay, I'm still wandering around having fun. Have I done justice to my kids? Okay. Number one, I don't think putting up answering the needs of society is the end all of things. So that's okay. You don't have to do that. Now, I know the church, and I have to look at the motivations the church has. If you want to reach the most people, you have to be in there with them. Now, it's important that in the church there are good people, and it would be nice to have a lot of them who are successful, because people tend to look up to those with success, and they tend to glom on to what they think that success is. It's very important that people who are successful Mormons credit the fact that they are Mormons for their success. That's good missionary work, because people will go, I want to be like Mitt Romney, or I want to be like the Marriott, or I want to be like the Osmonds. It's very important to have a good corral of those people. The more you can have, the better. Because if every little town has successful Mormons sitting there that was a good person and was successful too, and they went and they said, I'll tell you what the secret to my success is, it's my belief in the tenets of the Mormon Church, boy, will that help the numbers grow? Will that help people come to church and learn more about it and maybe get converted to it? Absolutely. And that's what the church is all about. It's about trying to spread the word about this opportunity. So I understand that. Now, you know, does everybody have to do that? No. But that tends to be the basic philosophy, because that's going to reach the most people. We really have to look at volume here, to be honest. You know, you want people to be successful, so you tell them, you know, go and work hard and get things. Be a successful member of society, because, you know, being like me, being a radical nonconformist, isn't going to win you lots of friends and admirers. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, I am content in that, even if I end up with a bunch of really radicalized children that grow into radicalized adults. But there's still groups of people that will say, wow, you know, I really dig your ideas, man. You know, that's really cool that you can still influence people that way. And you can still say, you know what, I'm intelligent, I'm very deep thinker, maybe, or at least I think I am. Other people tend to say so too. People that respect me say it, I guess. And let me tell you about what I've found. I'm not an atheist. I definitely believe in God. I believe God has an offer for you. And of course, I take it from a whole different standpoint than most Mormons do. Like I said, I'm probably the least dogmatic Mormon there is. You know, I don't follow the tenets because I believe in following tenets. I believe there's tenets, and I just choose which tenets I want to follow. I don't do that. I'm doing it because I think it's true. I'm doing it because I want that. You know, you can say, oh, well, gee, that's a weird take on it. You know, yeah, I guess compared to what you're used to hearing, yes. It's a very different take on it. I have a very different take on the church. Like people say, if you go to a social gathering, you kind of figure that everybody at a social gathering is kind of like you. And you can tell when somebody shows up that's not, because, people look at them funny and they tend to end up getting pushed to a corner. I'm not like most Mormons. When I go to church, I can almost guarantee to you that I'm not similar to most of those people. In fact, I can even go so far as saying, that we don't even travel the same road together. I'm on a different road than they are. Now, I think I'm on the right road. I don't know. It's not a question of being right or wrong. I think I think we're headed to the same destination. They have a whole different outlook. Well, I think we may be on the same road. I just have different reasons for being on the road than most of them. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm confused about that. It's certainly possible. So I think I've come to the decision that I can go ahead and continue what I'm doing. If my kids become radical based on what their father tells them, so be it. I have to share with them what my thoughts are, and I've got to leave it in God's hands that He's going to send to my family the kind of people that it's going to be okay for, that they're going to be able to handle it, that my kids are going to be okay with that. I want my kids at 30 to have their heads screwed on straighter than I'm able to do at 40. I'm going to try to share with them what I've learned. And if society thinks I'm doing a rotten thing to them, well, to hell with society. What do they know? I've seen what they do to most people. And I'm not interested in that, so I'm not going to go and appease them. I think this recording is taking long enough. How long has this sucker been going here? Oh my goodness, over an hour. So this is a good time to stop. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to episode 579. What should I call this thing? Society? I don't know. Feeling good about bucking the system. But I'm not really bucking the system. That's what I'll talk about next. And I talked about it before. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic, episode 579. You can contact me at autism.quix.us. And have a great day. Bye. Oops, once I get my little pointer over here. Whee! See you later, bye.